Welcome to the Cinephile Hissy Fit Podcast, brought to you by the Ruminations Radio Network and sponsored by Film Obsessive. This is the Tirades Film Movie Debate, hosted by two film critics, cool dads, and struggling teachers. I'm Don Shanahan.
And I'm, what am I, a sixth girl? I'm the seventh girl.
Ah, nice. To the to our more male audiences, they might not know what Will is talking about, but to our the finer folk who listen to our show, we might be pinging a movie they've heard of here a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, we're glad to have you folks. This is all for tantrum's sake. We're sure passions and high fives wash away any place for hate. No matter what, we encourage you all to love what you love. But for now, the gloves are off and the hissy fit is on. This week is the first of kind of, Marvels before they were Marvel, hearts before capes. We're working. It's an efforting process of what we're going to call this. But we recently had an editorial show where we talked about how the romantic resumes of a lot of the current quote-unquote movie stars are lacking a little something. And my theory was they're lacking credits of romance, whether it's rom-coms or romantic dramas. And there's, you know, the generations before the folks that are going on now have them, including many of the MCU actors we've come to know and love. But there's a whole crop of people that are just kind of right after. And we talked about Chris Hemsworth, Tom Holland, even Andrew Garfield. Like, there's some folks that just kind of don't have that, to me, that four quadrant cracking romantic credit on the resume that kind of makes them more well-rounded. Patrick Swayze, because that was the next, you know, bridge we built, was the crossover stars that were, you know, dudes like him, chicks dig him. And it's kind of an every person star then, where not just a serious actor who just happens to maybe do a comic movie every now and then. So this week we've got 13 going on 30 with Jennifer Garner and the Incredible Hulk himself, Mark Ruffalo.
Also, just read this right now. The director of 13 Going on 30, Gary Winnick, actually died at the age of 50.
Shoot.
Directed some other interesting films for sure.
Yeah. he stayed in the chick flick wheelhouse for a good little bit here. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I just realized that he had died at the young age of 50 in 2011.
Oh, bummer.
So that's a shame.
Well, Gary, this is for you. This is all my fault. So our format is this. The recommending lover is going to go first. I assume that's me as the guy who saw the movie once before Will did. I'll get 5 interrupted minutes to shower some praise and state a high-minded case of why this made Mark Ruffalo more adorable than he already was. The hater follows with 5 interrupted minutes of their own to present their counterpoints of any manner of intellectual scorched earth. After that, we'll open it up for about 30 minutes of shared conversation where the hissy fit really gets chippy. I'm kind of guesstimating that I was the initial fan here. Where is this on your letterbox, sir? We should be tail the tape here before we split our turn.
Well, you know, I like halves.
Of course.
But so I went 4.5. I actually really enjoyed this, but probably I actually have my approach would be, I think, a little bit different, especially since I saw this at a later part in my life.
Yeah.
So you definitely should go first.
Sure. I'm 4 stars, so I don't do halves, and it was never close to being 5, but it's just very good. And I had not seen this movie, I'll just start the 5 then. I had not seen this movie quite likely since the 20 years it was in 2004 when it came out. Happy I did. Threw it up on Netflix last night with the missus. Laughed, enjoyed it. Remembered all the great times that came with being 2004. The flip phones, the fashions, the where could life go in that particular time. And I remember going back to the early aughts where I was a big Alias fan. So Jennifer Garner was definitely my wheelhouse. Where I was watching this with those anticipatory eyebrows in 2004. We're like, let's see what she can do. And like anybody of my age, and even the age after me before me, being a fan of big. Any movie that can kind of dabble with that a little bit is always a good fun concept. Like I'm here for that. If you can tell me a compelling story, make some good characters along the way and not just, you know, ape, you know, big as you go, you'll have me for a good time. And, sure enough, watching this movie this time with my eyes and my lenses more on Mark than it was on Jennifer. Wow. I was just really impressed, and I shouldn't be unimpressed because, Mark being more of an indie guy before stepping into movies like this and movies like the MCU, where, you know, he has shown his chops to kind of do just about anything you want him to be. To me, he is a chameleon of heart and charisma, where he doesn't have to be the most, you know, he's not going to be knock your doors off attractive kind of heartthrob beefy guy, but like just being a good, nice guy. It's hard to sometimes get those more vain, more big, more celebrated, more clean cut, so to speak, more traditional movie stars or people cut from that kind of look to be like, I think we talked about this with like Angelina Jolie. Like Angelina Jolie is almost so exotic, she can't play like, you know, Sandra Bullock's character in While We're Sleeping, you know, a token lady at the subway in the CTA in Chicago. Like Sandra Bullock can do that because she's just more wholesome. I think maybe that's the word I'm looking for Mark. Mark is just really wholesome. And it shows in this movie where he plays just this nice, you know, forced back together best friend part for a woman who's lost in her brain as if she's been 13 and doesn't remember anything about her life between there and then and there. It still turns into kind of a workplace movie where if that doesn't invest you, like, you know, the machination, so to speak, of running a magazine and where all that, you know, talk and work and scene is, if that's not your cup of tea, so to speak, this could be a bit of a grind, you know, a bit of a grind of a movie, but I think it helps that the workplace is filled with really affable characters. Andy Serkis, who I completely forgot was in this movie until I explained it last night, does a great job as kind of the neurotic boss who just has flavors of his own because it's Andy Serkis coming a year off of the end of The Lord of the Rings, where obviously a hot talent as he was, but to see him, you know, without the CGI is nice because then you realize, wow, that guy can really kind of do anything you want him to do and be fun doing it. Whether it's the facial expressions, the eyebrows, the ominousness as a boss, it's just fun to see. And then I also forgot that Judy Greer is in this movie, and Judy Greer has made a career out of doing this as the second fiddle, you know, whether it's the best friend or it is the villain, the antagonist or the protagonist, however you want to put it. Judy Greer is just comedy perfection when she is this smarmy, you know, half approachable, again, not knockout beauty in kind of that kind of way, but just that person you could see being your coworker at your office that maybe on a good day you like her, on a bad day you probably hate her guts, and she's a blast in that. Still, to get this movie to work, you have to get Jennifer Garner to do her thing. And I did not know watching Alias where she's just a hardened, you know, spy, more of a decadent kind of, you know, part in that. And you know, that's J.J. Abrams, so it gets trippy as it goes. But I never knew she could do this in terms of like the comedy stuff. And there was definitely lines last night that I'm just laughing out loud, you know, like, I like your dress, you know, and just, of course, because I got these boobs to fill it. I'm losing my shit watching this movie, forgetting all of 2004 that has passed between seeing it again. So this was a happy experiment. I'm glad to see it. In terms of our topic, this just reminds me just how cuddly and wonderful Mark Ruffalo is. He's that guy you root for in a movie, the one you hope, you know, gets the girl. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think actors, movie stars need these things on the resumes. We had that editorial talking about it, and this was a good first step to see it from likely, you know, somebody who's supposed to be the biggest Avenger, yet when we finally see him in human form, he's mostly the slightest Avenger. So to see him to be able to do a nice romantic part and get out there and yuck it up was fun to see. So Mark Ruffalo, good job. Jennifer Garner, good job. Gary Winnick, good job. Andy Serkis, good job. And Judy Greer, good job.
Sorry, I didn't hit on mute. Yeah, that's I like that. That's a great review there. And I'm going to probably get super depressing on my part. But let me I put 30 minutes on my time. I shouldn't do that. That would be stupid. Sorry.
I'm here for it. If it's 30, it's 30.
Yep, it's definitely not 30 minutes. All right. There it is. 5 minutes. Okay. Did I play it? I did. Okay. Wasted 3 seconds on that. Okay. 13 going on 30. I got to say, Jennifer Garner to me seems kind of like in that Jennifer, not Jennifer, Kate Hudson level to me of like, you know, she had like some of those big moments and then kind of got stuck in a certain gear and it was really hard for her to break out of it. Like I've never, like Kate Hudson, you know, like Almost Famous, and maybe there's some other things in there too that I'm just forgetting, but for the most part, it kind of was like, wow, what an amazing performance. And then it kind of leveled out and she never kind of really rose to those peaks again. I kind of think of the same thing about Jennifer Garner. It's not that I never thought that she was a bad actress or anything. It's just that I never was able to take her as seriously as perhaps other female actors. However, watching this, and I will say it is very hard for her to, with all these nice wispy dresses and her incredible body, to hide all the muscles that she has from being a spy on TV. Regardless, it's a wonderful performance, really, really layered and detailed. I mean, this is on the level to me of like Tom Hanks in Big, you know, where this is just you're seeing kind of a movie star come to life. There was a reviewer in Variety named Joe Layden, who said, quote, Garner throws herself so fully and effectively into the role that in a few key scenes, she vividly conveys Jenna's high spirits and giddy pleasure through the graceful curling of her toes. Mm-hmm. This is literally a head-to-toe performance, and it's brilliant. I think it's one of the best performances I've seen, to be honest with you. So, like, high praise there. I love it. I think it's wonderful. The movie itself is interesting because it takes the normal rom-com slash body swap idea and kind of, I'm not going to say it subverts the genre, but it takes a different approach, which I, as a nearly 42-year-old man now, and someone who oversees children daily, you know, teenagers, 13-year-olds, basically, you know, this one hit a little bit different seeing it at that age. Now, yes, it has the cutesy bits, it has the funny bits, it's got its moments of levity for sure. I mean, and like many rom-coms and body swaps, there's always going to be some, you know, base level humor, you know, the boob humor and things like that, or I saw this thingy, you know, stuff like that. But what I think makes this movie a cut above the common fare of those two genres is that it kind of takes an alternate 1985 approach from Back to the Future 2, where it's like, yes, we'll make her get her wish of being 30, but we're going to show the future of what, you know, her current mental state is at 13, what she wants and how that manifests. One thing that I constantly try to tell kids, especially in this social media age where children are so exposed to adultness on a constant 24/7 level, is you got to be a kid while you got to be a kid. Because one thing I took from this, now, I like I said, I enjoyed the movie. I laughed a lot. I thought it was charming. It was also fun. But I also thought I was super depressed because adulthood is a hellscape that we are all trying to effortlessly get away from. Because at least the thoughtful ones, I will say I'm a thoughtful person. You know, we always are thinking about the tremendous errors and trying to erase parts of our past that we wish we couldn't have. And what's so funny is, when I see that and I see doubts and regrets, and I think about decisions I've made that led to things that maybe I didn't want to happen, I think about the kids that I see in 7th and 8th grade, 12, 13, 14-year-olds that are so desperately trying to get out of being a kid, you know? And this movie has, they want to be an adult, and the adult in the room wants to be a kid again just because it's simpler. It's kind of a weird paradox where the kids in real life, they don't know how easy they got it, you know, until it's taken away from them and then they want it back and vice versa. And this movie really hit me in the feels there because I was just like, man, you can really see the effect of choices that you make, even as a kid, that affect you as an adult. I mean, the formation of your personality, who you choose to be your friends, things like that. So this movie, the reason why I think it's a cut above is because despite all the some of the silly humor and the fantasy of it all, there's actually some hard-hitting stuff here. Now, the one benefit of that is that it gets a very happy ending, and that's something I'm very happy with as well, which is maybe turning me onto this whole rom-com thing. My 5 minutes is basically up, but I was just going to say that this is one of those that's going to teach you a little bit about life too, on top of making you laugh and smile and have a good time. So,
well done, sir. Mm. All right, let's take a quick break for a short announcement from our non-corporate partners and friends.
You've been listening to another fine, fine podcast on the Rumination Radio Network. This is Game Agent ET from Oh God, It Hurts! And we hope you keep on listening to our fine, fine podcast here on ruminationsradionetwork.com.
No, I love what you just unspooled there for 13 going on 30. You are spot on because, I think if you, even if it's Back to the Future, even if you take a time travel movie, not even a body swap movie, if you're doing those things, there's always that hanging regret. There's always that audience distance where you are going, man, if I had that, what would happen? Or what could I do? And you know, boy, I hope it turns out well. And for you teaching 13-year-olds to distill that down to, hey, be a kid as long as you can, because this, you got, like you said, you got it easy. I know there's lots of troubles now, but imagine what they do as an adult. And man, you are spot on. Great read of the movie and great read of finding the next level pieces that are in there. Cause there's there, like I'm fighting off a little mistiness in the eyes last night for sure. It's wonderful to watch.
Yeah. And I get now why perhaps this genre is so popular and maybe why it needs to come back, because I mean, despite the fact that I think a lot of people assume I'm just this black-hearted negative person all the time.
Yeah, comics and horror movies, right?
I do enjoy positivity. I do enjoy when something is wholesome and good. Mm-hmm. I can see why the genre like this, where there is a built-in happy ending to this, makes sense to me. Like I get why that would be comforting to go to something. I read a study, you know, that said, and this is a partially why for my own stress this year, I've kind of taken a backseat of watching just new stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And watching things I used to watch or really feel comfort with, is because someone with, like, I read that, you know, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, like actual diagnosed stuff. Like, so I've read studies that, like, the reason why people like to rewatch things or re-listen to things or do things is because you know the outcome.
Right.
And it gives you that, even if it's just for an hour and a half or 2 hours, it gives you that, those moments of, okay, I don't need to stress about this because I know what's going to happen and it's going to make me smile. So, like, why would I not want to have a 1.5 to 2 hour experience where I don't have to stress about anything or guess what's happening. I can get the outcome and it'll be a happy ending, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I get that. So I was just gonna say, I get why maybe this genre needs to make a big comeback and why something like this works when it's done right. Because, like I said, despite the fact that I am pessimistic and I have issues, like, it was nice to sit down and just see something completely, I'm not gonna say completely wholesome, but
no, you know, just there's something some silliness there. Yeah.
That was just something that is sweet. I just, there's room for that in our culture, and I think we've lost that a little bit. I
agree.
I mean, I have more to say on that, but I'm gonna let you actually talk. So.
No, I think you're spot on with, like, just why. I don't want to get all the Scorsese level on it, but, like, this is why we go to the movies, you know, like. These are 2 hour vacations and they are escapism. And sometimes escapism can come in many different flavors. Sometimes we want those thrills, like our life is a little boring. Can you kind of perk us up a little bit, you know, or I'm missing, or in this case, like, I'm missing a little love and reflection in my life. Can I get a dose of it for an hour and a half? And, sure. and while you're there, see people I like, see things I enjoy, you know, tap my toes to a silly musical number or pretend I think I remember the Thriller dance. And when done right, I like to think there's always a place for these, and they're part of, to me, they're part of the spine of making movies where, yes, these are, and this is going to sound Scorsese again too. I get that there are artistic exercises at play in terms of, like, trying to be Terrence Malick or trying to be Martin Scorsese or trying to expand the art form. But I think there's a place for just tell a good story well and just tell an entertaining thing that's approachable. Cause there are existential things made by artistes and auteurs that do challenge the medium and hit us in different ways in terms of intellectually. But you know what? Like, it's, I, they're still in an arm's length because they're too abstract and they're too much, where you can come into something like this and go, you know what? I was 13 once. Where was I at? What was I thinking of? There was a time when I was 13. I wanted to be a big kid. What did I want to be when I grew up when I was 13? Was it how I turned out now, or was it something different? And chances are we play those things in our heads when we watch a character go through them. And that's, to me, that experience is as cathartic as thrills, as spills, as chills. And I think, yeah, there is a place for that. And I would love to see that comeback to it. I think what it takes to make that comeback happen is just some commitment from good stars that, you know, that you want to come see. You want bring the, you know, bringing in good talent makes good movies. I think that helps a lot, because I think the, you know, the Hallmarks and the Christmas movies and the Netflix crowds and the street to streaming, that has kind of hijacked romantic comedies, where that's the only place they're getting made. And therefore then getting made a little lesser and a little smaller. Now, don't get me wrong. These things don't have to be $100 million blockbusters or anyway, but like, again, let's see some better talent come down and make them. My hopeful part for all of that is watching Barbie come through the last year, where that on, you know, at its core, yes, it's a dramedy. I don't even want to say it's a dramedy. That's a comedy that just happens to have really heady ideas that would fit in a bigger, taller place. But at its core, we're watching a rom-com. And if that could be the thing that propels a few more rom-coms to come through studios that want to play copycat and go, hey, what can we do to get a little bit of that Barbie juice, get a little of that pink juice, get a little bit of whatever, be girly for a while, like a target demographic that is not often fed. Can we do better on that? And it'll take a year or two to, you know, films that have been made into development in the last 8 months that'll turn into things that'll be made in 8 months from now. But we'll see. You know, I like that we can go back to these 90s and aughts where this was a cottage industry.
Yeah. And I know that we talked about this in the last episode, but I think we saw the movie with Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney. Made a lot of money in that rom-com area. And it was kind of an outlier because, you know, you had like last year was interesting because you had these quote returns to these formats that aren't really seen much. There was that Jennifer,
No Hard Feelings,
No Hard Feelings, which I thought sucked, but regardless, you know, that was like attempt, someone was like, oh, an R-rated gross out comedy. Right. And those haven't been made in a while. And then there was that Anything But You, I know that was a 2024 release, but
yeah,
but you know, that came out and was like, oh, rom-com is back, you know? And yeah, I was just looking at the top 10 highest grossing rom-coms of all time or whatever. And, you know, a lot of them, not a lot of them, but most of them are anywhere between like that 95 to 2005, you know, area where like, every year you could just expect those to come out. They were, I mean, maybe not as prolific and obviously not as earning potential as like a Marvel film or console movie, but you know, you could always rely on four or five of those things to come out every year. It even got to the point where like, you know, Matthew McConaughey was like, you know, cornering the market on the shirtless poster of him just being in rom-com. So it's, I would like to see, as long as they're intelligent, like
I agree.
That's tough because another one that, you know, I just, you know, praised the director for this one, Gary Winnick, but he did one, I think maybe 10 years later or whatever, called Bride Wars, which is kind of a bad example of, of a rom-com, you know, where it's like, and there you go, there's Kate Hudson again for you. And,
And Anne Hathaway.
There's definitely ways to do it, and there's definitely ways not to do it. This seems like, I mean, you're more of an expert than I am on this genre. I mean, it's not to say, and I'm going to talk about Mark Ruffalo in a minute, and there's actually some other things he did that I've seen on the rom-com department, but I mean, you're more of an expert. You've kept up with it more. I mean, it's something that, like, for example, I mean, I try not to be, you know, I try to be all inclusive, and I think art is art and blah, blah, blah. But if there's two genres that, like, I really stay away from in the theater and I won't watch on streaming or any of that stuff, it's usually rom-coms and, like the broad comedies, like Will Ferrell stuff, you know, things or like Kevin Hart stuff. Like, I just have no interest in them. I'm not going to say they're bad. But I think that you've kept up somewhat in the genre, and I mean, how you gave it 4 stars. Obviously, you recommended it for this. I mean, would you say this is cream rising to the top? This is the rare one, or are, you know, are they hitting more than missing in this genre?
I unfortunately, because of the market flood, that probably cost them their place at the A-list or at the multiplex. And now to see them hijacked by, like I said, the Hallmark movies and the Christmas movies and just the, like, you know, these are the, I hate to say the Christmas stuff, but the Christmas stuff is like over inundated where every single one of those is a rom-com, you know, and they just have the same burly flannel and snow and dumb shit and soap opera actresses coming over where... back then in 2004, this was a cream rise to the top in a big field because that was still kind of the heyday that you're seeing, like Enchanted with Amy Adams would be 3 years after this. And, you know, Will Smith had Hitch right around here in 2006 and The Proposal with Ryan Reynolds would be 2009. So there were still big hitters that would come, you know, like one good one a year. But there was still a whole lot of fluff because there's still like Bride Wars. There's still a bunch of just crap in there. Mm-hmm. So no, this would be one that I think Cream has risen to the top on over the time because this one kind of stuck because it was, you know, it was more big than it was like a dating movie, you know, like you wait forever for any action, so to speak, in the couples department. So this, you know, that one was able to play that way. And I think that's part of the reason why it becomes a good one because it was smarter. It had something else going on than just boy wants girl, girl wants boy. What do we do about it? You know, like we're talking about things like from that list, like Enchanted, where that one just happens to be a princess thing, but it's incredibly romantic. You've got stuff like, I know The Proposal, where it's, you know, a classic hate each other, but then find a way to like each other part of the movie, you know, and you need smart ones. Or if you go back to like the 90s heyday, you have stuff like As Good As It Gets with Nicholson and Helen Hunt, where that's just a quirky one where there's mental illness mixed in with it, where
it's also a scene of surprisingly graphic violence as well. I remember when I saw that, I was like, what the, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, yeah. I know.
But no, like, I think you're, I think the rare part, the rare ingredient that we don't see anymore is the smarts. It's either too smart. It's either high concept, too smart, or it's the stuff that people probably complain is being made by AI, where it's just regurgitated, repetitive stuff because no one, the creatively bereft and bankrupt Hollywood, where we don't have good ideas for romances anymore. And I feel like we're down to, like one good one a year. Like I remember in 2015, The Big Sick came around with Kamal Nanjiani, and that one came out of nowhere, and it plays more dramedy than it does rom-com, but at least had enough rom-com to make us go, wow, look at that. How good could that be if we can stretch it out and put, you know, still have laughs there. Like I think somewhere, especially lately, we don't get a lot of just dumb, silly ones where I think someone's idea of high concept is we need it to be a dramedy. We need to be taken seriously. We can't be fluff anymore. You know, the fluff's on Netflix or the fluff's on the Hallmark channel. So I think we forget how to do fluff. And maybe the two from last year, because there's not a lot of depth in No Hard Feelings and there's not a lot of depth in anyone but you. So maybe we can get back to
to prove my point that I...
Yeah.
But at least maybe with Anything But You, like they're going with a hot flavor right now in Glenn Powell, and they're going a name brand female... you know, actress who's kind of really popular right now, and like they're building something off of that as opposed to, like, you know, I kind of feel like they went into the maybe the script, I don't know the history of it or anything, but
sure
you know, it feels like they made it for them as opposed to the other way around.
I think you're right,
like, oh, we're just gonna, you know, so that's
and that's nice. That's the thing, like we grew up in a time in the aughts and the 90s where these were made for stars, like, hey, Will Smith, we got this thing Hitch we think you'd be perfect for, you know, or Ryan Reynolds getting together with Sandra Bullock, hey, we got this thing where you'd be perfect for, we got Sandra Bullock in here too. And the fact that actors would take these roles and welcome these roles and throw their 100% in, you know, of their work effort, promotional, you know, work into it, that's what helped a lot of times, and kind of goes to the topic that brings us here, is just that idea of, like, you know, these were star-making roles because, like, we would see these folks in serious places or in action places, but we want to fall in love with them at the same time, or or in a sexy, horny Lauren Knight way, we want to see them, you know, flex their charisma and like do something cool with it. So, and that's kind of Glenn Powell right now. Like Glenn Powell is this, you know, this good-looking man who has done a little comedies here. Like I've seen Everybody Wants Some, but he's Top Gun.
Yeah,
you know, he's these. Big, he's the beefcake at this point. If he can yuck it up in a rom-com with Sydney Sweeney, you know, stripping pants off and chasing spiders, whatever he's going to do in that movie, you need to see serious actors be able to make a fool out of themselves. And I think that's a missing level of chops. Like you said with Jennifer Garner, like she might not be able to shed those alias muscles, but she can just emote and bring herself down to a 13-year-old girl where you're convinced looking at her, like just the way she emotes surprise and shock and fear. It's brilliant. And it therefore shows her range as an actor if she wanted to do anything else other than kick people's asses.
Yeah. But speaking of range, I'm gonna sideline you here. I'm gonna move over to Mark Ruffalo now, since
please do.
He kind of started this whole project based on the OG Avengers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So from 2003 to 2007, I'm gonna give you.
He's got stuff in there. You're right.
I'm not gonna list them all, but I'm just gonna show you. This is like a level of Joe Pesci and Home Alone and Goodfellas in the same.
I know,
level,
right?
Of stuff, right? So 2003. Here's two completely different. View from the Top, rom-com, Gwyneth Paltrow, airline flight attendants, and In the Cut the same year.
Oh, yeah. See, there's going for it.
2004, you have this, 13 Going on 30, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where he's kind of playing a classic. Weirdo.
Yeah.
And then Collateral, Michael Mann, rugged action thriller, right?
Yeah.
2005 is his rom-com year. He must have got a bunch of scripts after 13 Going, because he did Just Like Heaven, which I have seen. That's the one I think where Reese Witherspoon's dead or something.
Yeah, it's a rough one. Yeah.
And rumor has it, which I haven't seen either, it's a Jennifer Aniston one. Then he's in All the King's Men in 2006. And then I think his career path, like what you would end up kind of hiring him for over the next 20 years, or not 20 years, but next 15 years, the Zodiac, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he either plays kind of the and that's no disrespect to something
He plays a serious character in a serious place.
Yeah, so he's doing Zodiac, and then actually he's in one of my favorite movies. I wouldn't say it's a rom-com at all. The kids are all right in 2010. But after that, it's
pretty much... That's a serious family dramedy. There's
movie. After that, I mean, once Zodiac hits, he's kind of...
He's on
another level. At least in that 2003-2006 level, it's like...
Like pre-Avengers.
Okay, I'm going to get my Mark Ruffalo in the rom-com and in the hardcore serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to see his dick in one movie and he's going to be a dick in another one. Right.
Right.
And then once Zodiac hits, it's mostly for the most part, it's either tentpole stuff or very serious.
Like Date Nights at Tentpole, Shutter Island serious. He would trade back and forth. Well, Margaret is ultra indie. Then Bang Avengers in 2012. Right.
Cause like I'm looking to make your point about how they stopped putting these big stars in. So let's start with after the Avengers. Let's say after he's in the Avengers in 2012, he gets another kind of big franchise, the Now You See Me, right?
He did one
Spotlight, Foxcatcher, Now You See Me
Once
2.
Once you get to there,
all the Marvels. He does Dark Waters, which is a pretty dark thing. Maybe the Adam Project is about as light as it gets. I mean, outside of Marvel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He did one 2012. This would be rom-com-ish. It's Thanks for Sharing, the sex addiction comedy with him and Gwyneth Paltrow and Josh Gad, where it's rom-com, but hands-off kind of rom-com, but it plays like that. That was in the can before Avengers came out. So that doesn't count.
It was released after Avengers, actually. Yeah. But I know what you mean. But makes your point. It's like there's no room anymore for him.
Well,
it feels like they have to, and it's not his fault. I'm just saying
I don't think so either.
They want to hire him as either a Hulk-like person, like a name brand that you can put in another franchise, or in these super dark. Now, don't get me wrong; he's incredible. I mean, like, you know, he's still putting out good work. I mean, I thought he was amazing in Poor Things. I thought he was amazing in Dark Waters. I think he's some of the sneaky MVPs of those Marvel movies. Like, I mean, Thor Ragnarok, he's fantastic in that. Like, he's so good. And Infinity War, he's really great. It's just
The nice part is, like, because he's got a background in comedy, going back even to the indie stuff before 13 Going on 30, he could come into a Marvel movie, which where you need to be light, you need to yuck it up with the boys, and he can't. You know, he's not going to be the doom and gloom guy sitting in the corner pacing back and forth. Even though he's kind of Bruce Banner,
about killing himself with a gun and back out.
but ever since Infinity War, now we're on Smart Hulk, and like we're not going to get Tortured Hulk ever again, which is going to suck. Because like, yeah, this that's is, he's the pussification of the Hulk we've talked about before. Well, I don't like.
You've talked about the pussification. Yeah. I like Smart Hulk, but no. But no, there's yeah, there's kind of a warping of Hulk now where he's
that's a good word for it. Yeah,
he's kind of, you know, after a while, I mean, like. Mm-hmm. Michael Dorn didn't even want to come back for some of the Star Trek movies because they're just like, oh, so I'm just going to be the clown with all the jokes, you know? Like,
yeah.
Or the, by the time Star Trek Insurrection came around, it was like, it was like, oh, I have Klingon puberty jokes. Great, like that's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's true. I mean, you can't take him as seriously as you could. I don't think it's a total pussification, but I like the character. Yeah. But I know what you mean. It's not like
sure.
You're not going to get the guy that tried to kill himself with a gun.
No,
there's more never. Of a, there's more of a, like, I'm kind of a nerd stuck in,
yeah, exactly,
stuck in this and world.
And there's, you know, and that fits that. And it, sure, weirdly enough, that fits this level of Avengers that we're on. So, we needed him dark to get in, and the team is what made him light and settled him down. And he has an arc. I'm not going to say he doesn't, but, sure. I do. I miss the rage of Hulk. I mean, it's just,
right. But I think that's the, but the point is that, yeah, mm-hmm, after a certain point,
yeah,
he no longer, whether these, yeah, were the roles that he was getting or right, his agent right, was getting him or whatever, it just kind of stopped being, it kind of just became one or two things. Now he does those excellently, but it goes,
that's
to
why,
your, goes to your Hemsworth point. It's, yeah, like they're only casting him as, you know, there's,
it's action stars. Yeah.
Some exception. I mean, like Hemsworth, we'll probably talk about it. If
we get Ghostbusters,
like, the Ghostbusters thing, yeah, where he's kind of a dummy, but he's still playing on how handsome he is.
Yeah.
You know, like
same thing not, with Vacation too, you know, he's, yeah, just playing off a high.
This might be, if we're going to stick onto the OG Avengers, I mean, it's still, mm-hmm, an action film. It's still Mad Max, but it looks like he is playing kind of an ugly, crazy Australian person.
It's going to be hard to ugly him up. That's the thing. Like, he's so damn handsome.
Right. But
I mean, he's not going to play the Nevish librarian anytime soon.
Well, but you know, the thing is, you know, Mel Gibson, handsome gentleman, but like, yeah, he could, you know, George Miller made him look pretty crusty, well, yeah, in those movies.
But I'm saying for a rom-com, he's,
oh, gonna, no, like, no, I know that. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, to your point of,
oh, yeah, gotcha.
You've got to do something different.
Well, that's
with him. It's like, I think this is about as close as we're going to get with Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Is he's going to play this kind of grimy, gross Australian dude, mm-hmm, you know, that talks in a funny voice and does weird things, but who knows?
And maybe this is I think this is a good leaping off point, because, like, if you're going to be this good looking and this indomitable in terms of charisma, mm-hmm, use it in an evil way instead of in a heroic way. And then that can maybe, again, show some range, open the doors. And kind of that's Ruffalo doing the poor things thing. Like, he's a scoundrel in that movie, you know, and
he's pathetic. Like,
yeah, but it works because it's Mark Ruffalo. It's I'm not saying it's cuddly Mark Ruffalo, but it's like, you know, you look at him and go, he can be decadent enough to bang this girl, but at the same time, be such a sad sack by the time he's done, that what actor can do that without losing the charisma? And Mark can't.
Yeah,
that's why that movie's an announcement. Like, I know people did the whole welcome back to acting, like the way they did with RDJ and Oppenheimer. Yeah, yeah. You know, Ruffalo never left, but this is a nice part for him to go do something else, you know, or just make that next leap.
Well, back. And I was going to talk about the one I think is the poster boy for this is Ben Affleck, who
doesn't have a rom-com, or what do you mean?
No. He did the poster boy for doing what we're asking, like the Hemsworths to do in the Ruffalo and stuff, where he was making bomb after bomb, you know, and he eventually took like a couple years off. It seems like he had like 2 years off, you know, I mean, he was in, you know, the Christmas movie with Tony Soprano.
Surviving Christmas.
He was in a rough patch, right?
Yeah, he was 09.
But Extract is where he turned it around, because
right,
what he did in that movie was, not only did he not sign on as the star, he was very clearly a coast, like a supporting character, mm-hmm, that's not in it that much. But he also played like a kind of, not dirty, but just a grimy stoner.
Yeah.
And he had a beard, and no one had seen him with a beard before. And he had long stringy hair, and he was kind of pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, this is something he's doing that's not showy. Like, he's not trying to be the star of this movie. He's giving a performance. And then he would play, I think, I don't know if the order is in order here, but then he would play like kind of a disgraced like senator or something in that Russell Crowe movie. And
oh yeah, State of Play.
Mm-hmm. State of Play. And then he kind of just he started to make acting choices as That's opposed right. to star making choices, and it got him back. Now, granted, now he's Batman again, and he's doing all this yeah. stuff, but there was a little period.
McConaughey did the same thing. Like, he overdid the romantic comedies,
yeah.
and then Dallas Buyers Club, and, you know, Pretty Rick, and like some of those. Yeah, true. Yeah. That stuff comes his way, and he starts to make, like you said, acting choices. And it's a shame that acting choices, quote unquote, can't be rom-coms too. But because, well, again, I'm someone's going to besmirch, you know, like I said with the Scorsese stuff, people look down on these movies now, and that sucks yes. that they do, you know?
Well, maybe that's the thing, is it's going to take someone to do a Ben Affleck in Extract where it's going to be like, okay, I need to get, I don't know, we're sticking with Marvel actors, but let's mm-hmm. think of somebody like Henry Cavill is one of the things you brought up. Like,
yeah,
Henry Cavill's kind of stuck in that, you know, beefcake yeah. mode. Yeah, he's either a superhero or he's some kind of, you know,
brawny
huge, guy. Like, yeah. I think he does well in some of that.
Totally.
But yeah, I'd love to see him, you know, stretch those. So it's going to take a big star to take a risk and do yeah. that.
And it's not even, and I don't even think it's that hard of a risk. It's just, it's a career risk because someone's going to think, oh, he's just making a rom-com. It's going to be a devalue, I hate to say it like this, but it'll be a devalue of a quote unquote acting choice, but it'll be such a great markability choice that the acting stuff will come right back to him because people are like, oh, it's the guy everybody loved in The Thing that everyone loved. You know, like when Mel Gibson did What Women Want, he had been on that hot streak of Ransom and Braveheart and all this super serious stuff that mm-hmm. we forget just how fucking charming Mel Gibson is. And yeah. and that
movie doesn't age that well with
Mel
Gibson.
No.
That like, was in the list. That was like number four or something on the highest grossing rom-coms ever.
But today, an actor who looks that good and is that good and where you can play off their looks but still make them, you know, an asshole reformation project would be like Hemsworth. Like, Hemsworth's that good looking that he would be the office Lothario who could use some comeuppance if they were to ever remake a movie like that. And cause Chris could do all the physical sure. stuff and then still of course be a catch and a half. So yeah, they're just, yeah. and that movie didn't hurt Mel Gibson's career whatsoever. And if that's the one for me, and if that's the one for me, one for them stuff that people need to do now, or me, you know, even could do now just to, again, pad the resume, make some money in the bank. Like, you can't tell me Ryan Gosling's not laughing all the way to the bank with that Barbie money right now. Like, and he's going to go use that here for Fall Guy in 2 weeks. So he knows what he's doing, and he's done it some of the best, because he'll do the comedy stuff. He'll do La La Land. He'll do The Notebook. Like, drama's on the list too. Like, if mm-hmm. you can be Christopher Reeve and do Somewhere in Time, if you can be, I'm trying to think of the other drama ones, like Hugh Jackman will do, or even just I'm trying to think of the people who just made it. Even Mel Gibson still had that's more historical than romantic, but like Harrison Ford and Hammer Street, or I'm trying to think of like Gallipoli for Mel Gibson, but like a drama wouldn't hurt any of these guys either. Like, make a swooning romantic drama. Titanic with Leo. Like, that's the biggest one. You know,
it's interesting,
like,
you bring up Gosling, because he kind of actually has the opposite of what we're talking about, because he was kind of mired in middling like thrillers, like
yeah.
for most of, like after The Notebook, it felt like
yeah.
if you go through his resume, people forget, like, he was in all these, like, you know, these kind of February release Anthony Hopkins thrillers mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
And shit not, like that. Yeah, yeah.
And the one with Kirsten Dunst, like all the right things or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But,
well, you know, he was kind of mired in that. And then he found some kind of niche where, like, sure, he would still do
Crazy Stupid Love. That's the,
like,
one.
Yeah. What he would do, he kind of found, like, yes, he would still do, like, you know, The Place Between the Pines and Blade Runner mm-hmm. 2049 mm-hmm. stuff where he's serious. But it seemed like he was like, hey, I'm actually pretty fucking funny. I'm going to be in The Nice Guys. I'm going to be in Crazy Stupid yeah. Love. I'm going to be, you know, in Barbie, I'm going to be in the stuff where he kind of went the John C. Reilly path,
mm-hmm.
where John C. Reilly was a serious actor for a while yeah. and then turned, you know, 180 degrees and just became a comedy guy. And yeah, I think that Gosling's a good example. But before, let's steer it back to 13 on 30, just a little bit. Speaking of Ben Affleck, did you find it kind of incredibly awkward that Jennifer Garner was surrounded by Jennifer Lopez magazines the entire time. That was very strange.
Well, because like, if I remember correctly, she was the girl that broke the two of them up the first time, right?
I have no idea.
I gotta go back.
I don't know anything about my Ben Affleck dating history. I have no clue.
But no, they were together. They were together, Lopez and Affleck. They were together in the aughts leading up to Geely and all that, which was 03. This is 04. But yeah, they would, Garner and Affleck would meet and have two children together in the next decade after this. And then look where he is at. I mean, Affleck's back with J-Lo now. Jennifer Garner looks like she's living her best life and doing right. She's at that age now where she's stuck playing moms, but
she's a good one when she is. She's in the Jamie Lee Curtis Activia commercials phase of her career right now, where she's just doing bait commercials.
I know.
Health food commercials or whatever.
I liked her in, I know she didn't get any scenes really together with him, but like her and Ruffalo were together again in the Adam Project, you know, and playing husband and wife. So that was pretty cool, you know, and she played a good mom part there, and she does. But she is stuck. I think you just saw her. No, I'm thinking of Rachel McAdams, and she's old enough to start playing moms now. So I was thinking, are you there, God, it's me, Margaret, but that's not Jennifer.
I'm trying to see, like I said, I don't want to be disrespectful to her because I don't think I am. I just, she never kind of clicked.
No, she didn't hit that. She didn't become Julie Roberts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm trying to look at her filmography.
And she didn't become, like Daredevil sank her from becoming an earlier ScarJo.
That wasn't happening either. So. I mean, she got Elektra, but like Elektra.
She did. Bad. Yeah. But oh, that's right. That's where.
Because she was in Pearl Harbor, Catch Me If You Can. She was kind of like those smaller roles. And then she did Daredevil, 13 going on 30, then Elektra. So she was doing, she was trying to do that level, full Hollywood there. That's where they met, I think, Affleck and
Glenn. I thought it was Daredevil, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they've been on Daredevil. Yeah, for sure. And then Catch and Release, I remember, was one that kind of had a little...
Oliphant, right? Timothy Oliphant?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Juno was kind of a big...
That's a great
one. A big hit. But then, just kind of from that point on, I mean, if you look at what she did,
I'm paging down myself
here. You got Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, Valentine's Day.
That's the stinker that sank her and then McConaughey. Like, that was the last straw for McConaughey 3 years before
he went out. The Arthur remake, The Odd Life of Timothy Green.
Yeah, then it's just, then she's a mom. Poof, there it is.
Yeah, I mean, she was in Dallas Buyers Club, but it's pretty much when you look at it from there.
Girlfriend, Draft Day, Mom and Alexander and the Terrible Hole, Your Very Bad Day.
I think I just saw a spoiler for Deadpool and Wolverine, but she's in that as Elektra. I'll tell anybody who will talk to you.
Yeah. That's going to be the reset button movie for the MCU, by the way.
I never watched Alias. I hadn't seen this movie, obviously. Mm-hmm. I had seen her in things, but they had never really impressed me. Juno, if there was anything I remember her being in a heavy hitter as a main character, it was in Juno.
Because there was
a big debate, I remember. And I'm anxious to watch it now. Because I wonder if it's one of those movies that has either aged poorly or aged well based on the patter of the dialogue. You know, sometimes you watch some Kevin Smith movies and you're like, okay, this doesn't work anymore. The people don't talk like this anymore. It's not as charming as it was. And in our next episode, we're going to talk about that with Jim Carrey too. But I wonder if it has aged, because I remember being very, you know, there being a very strong reaction amongst my friends, and we would have arguments over the Jason Bateman character and the Jennifer Garner character on who was right and who was wrong.
Oh, that kind of stuff.
And we're in a very
pro-choice, pro-life, tenuous state of country.
And not only that, but also just responsibility and relationships. Like,
good point.
The great thing about it, and I'm probably, you know, if I could ever, thankfully, I think I never recorded anything, because I remember being very like pro Jason Bateman at the time, being like, yeah, let him abandon his life and pursue his music and be single and stuff like that. Where like, I'm probably seeing now that that's a little arrested development, no pun intended. With him. But I do remember also remembering Jennifer Garner and that being very complicated as well, because she wanted something and was not going to compromise on getting that. And I remember that you know, as a young man, mm-hmm. 2007, I was 25 or whatever. I remember being like, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's aged, that performance, because I remember that being a very big talking point in the movie. I would be interested to revisit. I would like to see some more Jennifer Garner, to be honest with you. This performance, same. I think, in 13 Going on 30 is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really exceptional performance.
Yeah, it really is.
I'd love to see more of her, and hope that maybe someday she can get the Kirsten Dunst treatment in Civil War and actually maybe get a movie where she's 40 plus and not just the mom, you know?
I agree. Like, if you can give her a stern, good adult part, that Kirsten Dunst comp is a good one. I agree. For Juno, I don't think the movie's going to age well. Watch today. I think you've got a movie where the rat-a-tat of the dialogue, just from Elliot Page alone, is going to be trickier, because it was already a wiser beyond their years character to begin
precocious,
with. The character Juno was just so massively, you know, sarcastic. No 17-year-old would act like that in real life, let alone do all of that. So and then right, the parental dynamics I think would be out the window in a movie in today's day and age. But
yeah, that's
a crazy little time capsule movie at that point there.
But you know, and I also heard that she was a lot of my youngest daughter says the world about Yes Day. She says that movie is fantastic.
Sure.
I mean, she was also 7 at the time, so who knows what her taste is. But you know, if I could see her just kind of embrace,
I mean, you know, I've seen her. She plays a good mom. I mean, you're worse. I mean, if this is a phase for her and she can get through it till she's 50 and then get to, like you said, I'm not saying she's the next coming of Meryl Streep, but if she can find, like you said, the Kirsten Dunst, the Michelle Pfeiffer stuff, the, you know, the Meryl Streep Jr. stuff, or even, I hate to say it, even Julia Roberts. Like, Julia Roberts had made, like, just good adult female parts that just, like, that happened to be non-rom-com for a bit there. So, yeah, something would be nice.
It does look like at one point she did get...
Jesus, she's already 50. What am I talking about?
Yeah, 52. 2018, she did get that movie Peppermint, which I guess was
that was supposed to be the big, like...
listed as a vigilante action thriller, but not to compare her to Jennifer Lopez, which doesn't seem fair, but Jennifer Lopez seemed to have cornered that market on, like, every now and then Jennifer Lopez would come out with
an ass-kicking movie.
Vengeance woman ass-kicking movie, like, once every 2 years, you know, or even Kate Beckinsale would come out with a couple
of those. Right. And that was definitely Jennifer's shot to do one of those.
I don't think that ended up working.
And, no, it did not.
Yeah, but if you look at everything from, I mean, I can't think of the last, I mean, maybe Dallas Buyers Club is the last drama since Juno or The Kingdom, you know, whereas the rest is basically just mom roles and generic rom-coms that never made a dent. So, I mean, good on her. She's doing what she needs to do.
Yep.
She's making a living. She looks like, like you said, she's having a...
Well, if she's doing the Jamie Lee Curtis yogurt commercials, someday maybe she gets everything in the world all in one. You know, she gets a rascable old lady part, and that would be fun too. So,
yeah, no, that's true. So if anything, you know, because you, I'm not going to say you forced me to watch this,
but you to watch this.
No, I definitely wouldn't have. I've seen, you know, I follow Judy Greer on Instagram because she's lovely, and also somehow just great. she gets hotter as she gets older, which I
can't figure out.
I follow her, and like she posts stuff about this movie all the time, and I'm always just like, man, this must be really good, but like I never will sit down and watch it. So when we finally were like, hey, let's do this, and I'm really glad I did. So that brings us up to the point of. Uh-huh. So we're going to continue this process.
Yeah,
so
on and off.
I think Don and I agreed that, like, to start me on getting back into the rom-com. I mean, I think I've seen, you know, some of the heavy hitters. Most of the heavy hitters. But, I mean, there's definitely stuff that I haven't seen, especially in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And maybe even before that. But, you know, to get me back on the track, we're kind of taking the Marvel route. We're going to look at the OG Avengers. So we're looking at Ruffalo, Evans, Hemsworth, Johansson. Would we be able to find one with Renner?
I'll do some digging. I got Downey
Jr.
Yeah.
So what is the next one in our series? Will we end up doing that? What are we going
to
do?
We'll go to Chris Evans, and we'll do, I believe it's 2011. I think it's the year, either the year of, and you make me look this up. We're going to do What's Your Number?
The big poster right here. It's 2011. Yeah.
2011. Okay. So that is the same year as First Avenger, if I remember correctly. Yes.
That's what I'm saying. I have the huge poster right here. I'm looking right at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, we're going to do What's Your Number with Chris Evans. Again, catching him before the superhero thing would turn him through, although he was still Johnny Storm a little bit before this. So, but no, this is, we're looking at kind of evidence of rom-coms on the resume and how it changes these guys. So it makes them better. And Chris is always better. So
yeah, this one obviously opened up avenues for Mark Ruffalo. But I think the problem with the industry is that he was never able to go back once he got into those avenues. And that's something you and I are both, I guess, pining for at this point. So.
I don't mind Chris doing what he's doing like recently post Avengers. Like obviously he's trying to do a little bit more. I think he's done some filmmaking stuff. He did like the Red Sea Diving Club or whatever the Netflix espionage movie was. He obviously played a delicious villain in The Gray Man. I'm glad he's doing something non-charismatic. Well, just taking it. Go ahead and try your evil on a little bit, you know.
Yeah, but he's doing the classic. A lot of Star Trek actors do this, where you know, Patrick Stewart for a number of years after The Next Generation just said, "I want everything anti-Picard. Like I want nothing that's like Picard," and that's why he was villains in a bunch of stuff. Or you know, a very openly gay man and Jeffrey and things like that, where he's completely not Picard. And I think a lot of actors try to do that. I think Keanu Reeves has tried to do that. You know, I expect Keanu Reeves will have another kind of attempt at like, hey, I'm going to do another Something's Got to Give, so that way people know I'm not just John Wick for the rest of my life.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
I love him in Something's Got to Give. I know it's a small part and he's the third wheel, but
he's
so fucking good, you know?
He's really good in that.
Yeah, Chris, we'll get back to this. It won't take much. I know like Pain Hustlers was maybe, and well, he tried with Ghosted, but that was more, he was the non-action guy, but still an action movie where they're still trying to squeeze him into some romantic-ish things with great co-stars like Emily Blunt and Ana de Armas, but it's just not clicking. So something's got to work for him.
I think that's more of an industry thing than anything else. I think people are just, you know, the market is so small now that they won't accept people other than what they're doing, which is, you know, superheroes at this point.
And yeah.
I don't say that in a negative way. That's just the way the market is, you know? Mm-hmm. So a general audience thinks you and I will generally find
things. He's going to,
but
guy like we're getting an episode ahead of ourselves, but a guy like Evans, because of just square jaw, good American looks and stuff like Knives Out, like he'll still challenge us some stuff. He's going to grow up to be like Paul Newman. You know, he's just going to be just cool forever. You know, it's going to be hard to make him uncool.
Very true. Very true.
But we'll get to that next week and we'll have to get through Anna Faris doing the ditzy thing. That is her one, her one move. So
can't wait. All right, folks, we have merch from shirts to stickers. Find some very sweet Cinephile His Fit swag on tpublic.com/user/RuminationsRadioNetwork. Follow us on Twitter at Cinephile Fit, on Facebook at Cinephile His Fit Podcast, and Instagram at Cinephile Fits. Find both of us by name on Letterboxd to check out our film reviews and ratings. We are also on Rotten Tomatoes. Thank you so much for your loyal listenership in our tussles and for connecting with us on social media. Cinephile His Fit is a Ruminations Radio Network podcast sponsored by Film Obsessive. If you enjoyed this show, the Ruminations Radio Network has more excellent programming with stellar hosts and spirited topics. Please rate, review, and subscribe to our show and others on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.